Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, it's Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California near San Diego.
Hello, I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
All right, let's start our next episode here with what amazing projects are we working on this week or new things in your studio?
I'll start. This isn't a project, but I just returned from a local Microsoft event in Chicago where MVPs from all specialties, not just PowerPoint, who live in the midsection of the country gathered. And unfortunately, it was mostly designed for dev MVPs, but it was great to connect with the other MVPs and, of course, the Microsoft team. Other than that, I'm working on a large template project, a really fun PowerPoint user guide for that template. I'm loving putting together tips and tricks separate from the template on how to use their template, and a ton of self-running presentations.
And really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. It comes in long spurts.
So what was I saw your pictures on Facebook. Was there an actual name to that event? I don't know.
It's called Open Days. And cool. I don't know if Nolan and Troy, you're both MVPs, but.
Okay. Very cool. I'll have to.
So maybe the
West Coast.
Maybe there'll be one on the East Coast.
There will be.
On the West Coast.
There will be.
Troy, what have you been doing?
Well, we're doing a quick turnaround on this episode, literally recording one day before it goes live, because I have been out of the office for 2 full weeks with my wife being tourists in Paris, France. It was our anniversary trip. It was our silver anniversary, so it was lots of exciting and fun times, but I really haven't been doing a lot of work. Now, the office has been busy. There's been a ton of projects going on, and I'm getting caught up on everything this week. But one project I've been proofing is a client's trade show booth, which is kind of neat because we're doing a lot of stuff that's not necessarily presentation design. We developed a large trade show booth graphic signage depicting the iconography of their new logo. They just did this whole rebranding, and they had a ton of information. We helped distill that down to kind of a very large graphic that represents what each of the logo attributes need. It's really cool. Not quite a self-running presentation like you're doing, Sandy, but we did this looping monitor display that has, you know, it's basically a call to action, and then it fades from there into a really cool photo montage of end users of their medical device, and then it goes back to the call to action. So cool. Kind of self-running, but I think it's a little different than what you're talking about, which is probably more fun.
Oh, I don't know. Longer. I guess the big difference is mine are longer. They're full stories, basically movies that the client has chosen to use PowerPoint to build.
Using PowerPoint in so many non-presentation or slide ways is the way to go. I got a really quick example, total tangent here, but yesterday after we got back and we're completely jet lagged, my daughter who's in high school has a project to do, and it was a video project. So they'd already shot the whole thing using iPhones in, you know, 4K resolution, which is just crazy in and of itself. They'd already done voiceover work. They'd already created a whole bunch of graphics. I mean, it was a really, everything was there except for putting it together in power, in video editing. We use Premiere. So when I got it all, she wanted to make like, you know, title cards. You know, here's the name of the thing. Here's starring this and that. I had her create all of those graphics, the text graphics in PowerPoint, and we just exported them as Ping images because I didn't want to do it in After Effects because I'm trying to get my high schooler to do it all. And I wanted to get it done in the same day. So we literally created all of the text elements in PowerPoint. It was our video editor, or excuse me, it was our image editor for creating all these Ping images that were then, we used effects in Premiere to bring them in and out. So it's kind of funny.
I've done the same thing. Cool. When I use Pro Show Producer to create a video, I export the, I use PowerPoint to create what I call the banner slides.
We'll have to talk about ProShow. Yeah. I didn't know you use that. I use it for a lot of happy face type videos for events.
Yeah. Happy face.
Happy face.
That's the name of a thing capturing, you know, stills and videos of everybody having fun at their event, you know, their corporate meetings, their forced fun, you know, where they've got to go out and do whatever. It's all fun, but we create a little end of like a wrap up. My sister, who's a professional photographer, uses it quite a bit as well, but hers are awesome because they're all about babies and kids. So anyways, that's Nolan. What's up with you?
Let's see. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke at an industry conference for creative agencies, which I do every year.
Awesome.
And got a client immediately. They were like rushing the stage. So
even more
already,
awesome.
I'm just starting on a very big template project for one of those agencies who was there. So that's good. And I'm also finishing up work on a pitch deck for a new reality TV show.
Wow.
Which is really neat, which I actually have not done before. But they're pitching a show and they needed a good deck.
You know what really needs to happen is a reality show of how to create a pitch deck for a reality show. So cameras are following you around.
Well, did you ever see the show The Pitch?
Yes.
Yes. That, I don't think I stopped watching it at the end. I think they went through two seasons, but that was kind of interesting to a degree.
Actually, a good friend of ours was a video editor on that show. So, you know, the teams got to go out and get resources, but they have to direct it. And he was a very frustrated video editor because he was like, they were making just not the best choices, but I'm not allowed to give them any advice. I'm only allowed to do what they say. It's like, so let's just say that work is not going in my portfolio. Only the fact that I was a video editor on camera for them. Cool. Everybody's busy.
Yeah. So we're busy and there's a lot of stuff going on beyond us. So we're instituting a new little topic section of the podcast, which is what's happening in the presentation world beyond us. And because there's always stuff happening, and the last couple weeks there have been some interesting things going on in the podcast world specific to presentation. One of our colleagues' podcasts is closing up shop, Rad Presenters podcast. If you're familiar with that, after 40 episodes, they're closing up shop. It's run by John Schwabish and Stephanie Evergreen, two great people that come from the data visualization world, and they're just writing books and speaking, and they have day jobs, and not quite sure how they manage time for a podcast, but so they're calling it quits, but they have still 40 great episodes up there. I was actually on the first one.
Yes, you were.
The inaugural. So have you guys listened to Rad Presenters?
I have. It's been a while though. Will we be posting that? A link? Is it?
Yeah, we'll post it. I'm not sure. Those episodes aren't going to go away. Right. So I'm sure they'll keep their website up for a while. And then also there's a new online presentation magazine all focused on presentation called presentationguru.com. And that's being run by a couple friends of ours, or launched by a few friends, including Emma Bannister. She runs a big presentation firm down in Australia, and also Jim Harvey of the UK. So definitely an international in scope, and it's good. The site is live, and there are tons of articles up there, and I'm sure we'll all be writing articles at some point for them.
Yep, they just went live. A lot of content.
Yep. Yeah, it's there's a lot. It's not just sort of like one blog post after blog post. There's a lot of stuff there.
Very cool. Nice.
Oh, we'll include a link to that as well, definitely.
Yep.
And speaking of websites, you know, the Presentation Guild is in pre-launch phase, and we just reached out to the presentation industry with their first virtual town hall. That was a couple of weeks ago. And last week, I think it was, PowerPoint design expert and author Julie Truerg held her first Inspired by Design session. It was for a members-only crowd. And speaking of members-only, currently because the Guild is in pre-launch phase, membership is by invitation only. So I would just say if any of the listeners would like an invitation to join at a discounted rate before we do go live, reach out to me on Twitter at PPTWiz. And I would just add that it's a great way for presentationists to, in any role, not just PowerPoint design or not just designers for presentations, but, you know, the behind the scenes, even if you're a presenter, it's a great way for you to have an impact on this organization that's being built just for them.
And Sandy, who moderates those webinars?
It varies. Tony Ramos, and I think, haven't you been invited to monitor?
Yes, I did the first one with Julie. So just testing.
Good test.
So I think I'll be moderating/hosting for at least a few of them.
I ended up missing that one because I was sick. So
yeah, I didn't want to say anything. But. Hey,
I have an excuse. I was literally out of the country and not allowed to work. But I was kind of. It was on my calendar. I did get a reminder.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't work though.
It was good. It was a good. It was a good first launch.
I'm excited about everything about Presentation Guild. I think it's going to become a huge. I mean, we're members, or I'm members of AIGA and a couple others. Mm-hmm. This is going to be. This is going to be fantastic for the presentation industry. It is such a needed thing. So I'm very excited about everything. And Sandy, your involvement is just fantastic.
Well, thank you. We're proud of it. It's needed. It's something, you know, standardizing presentations, elevating presentation experts to in the industry, the view of them. What is, Nolan, what is the term you hate for presentation designers?
Oh, PowerPoint jockeys?
Oh, yes.
Or PowerPoint specialists?
Exactly. We're getting rid of that, by the way.
Excellent.
That's not going to happen anymore. And I say the industry needs to get rid of that.
Yep. All right. So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about bullet points. Every one of us on this podcast will say, we know PowerPoint's not the problem. It's how PowerPoint, and let me be clear, other presentation software is used. So that brings us to bullets specifically.
Which is the most defining feature, perhaps, of presentation software.
Right. And so do you think bullets kill an audience? Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. And we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an easy topic. Yes or no?
End of story. Yes.
So why do we have the dreaded PowerPoint kills mentality? And I'm doing the air quotes there, PowerPoint kills mentality. PowerPoint used a bullet list default methodology. Keynote used an open structure that was set up for images and for transitions and for nice visuals. So one is perceived as a creative application. Keynote. The other is kind of perceived as business boredom application, PowerPoint. But each is just a canvas to be used however the presentation designer imagines it. I have many beautiful and compelling visual presentations that were created in PowerPoint. I have also seen bullet lists of 8-point type in Keynote. So it's is the PowerPoint kills idea the application or the end user? I think it's more about the first impression from its standard default templates that kind of set the application up for one or the other. But it's really just about a perception of how the programs were set up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll expand on that. You touched upon it, but PowerPoint is the only application that I know of, and I say this all the time, that when you start a default file, it tells you what kind of content to start creating. You know, you open up Word, it doesn't say start writing an iambic pentameter. You open up Excel, it doesn't say start entering your quarterly sales figures. But with PowerPoint, right off the bat, hey, put your header here, put your bullet points here. So that default view has led to more bad presentations and the stereotype than anything else.
Kind of the perspective of, well, if Microsoft is telling us this is how it's a presentation should look, well, let's just follow that format.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd add, though, that when you think about the PowerPoint kills mentality, no one perpetuated that more than...
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Edward Tufte. And, you know, he's probably made a lot of money and fame off of hating PowerPoint.
Probably. Yeah,
probably.
Definitely.
What was his book?
Doing pretty well for himself.
The book was what? Cognitive Style of PowerPoint. And that's where he featured the now infamous space shuttle Columbia crash slide.
Right. Where he literally says PowerPoint caused the Columbia crash. Yeah. I mean, literally the program. Mm-hmm. And he's got some arguments with there having to do, I mean, and his basic argument with regard to that is correct, that engineers talking to other engineers should not be presenting in PowerPoint up on a screen. They should have engineering documents and being looking at calculations and equations and things. So he's right in that regard, but he takes it a little far.
A little far, yes.
Much farther. Sandy, you initially wanted me to defend Tufte, and I will when it comes to data and information design. I'm definitely not going to do it with PowerPoint, because the thing is, he doesn't provide any solutions when you ask him, which I have. I've literally personally asked him. I said, well, what other solutions, you know, if you hate PowerPoint? And he doesn't. He basically thinks all information should be printed on a printed page, and that's That's just not, that's not the world we live in.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So you've literally had the opportunity to chat with him about his perspective?
Oh, well, chat is a generous word. He knows what he likes. I've seen him in person a few times. One of the questions I asked him was because he trashes presenter after presenter, saying, "Oh, this person's terrible." And I said, "Well, who do you think is a good presenter? You know, who should we aspire to?" And he was genuinely stumped. He said, "Well, I don't know. Well, when I was growing up, FDR on the radio was great." I'm like,
"Oh my gosh.
Really? That's, you got to go all the way back there to FDR." Well, so yeah, he likes his negatives. He doesn't so much like his positives or positive solutions when it comes to presentation.
Well, I just want to be clear. I wasn't looking for you to defend him. I just, you know, maybe it's that other perspective that you gave very, very well.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I've spoken out publicly against him so many times. He's blocked me on Twitter.
Really?
Yes. I had no idea. I didn't think I was being a troll or anything, but yeah, I can't even tag him.
I want to try to get blocked by him. That's cool. Let me try.
Yes, I guess it's a claim to fame.
I love that. So Tufte aside, our MVP colleague, Dave Parady, conducts a survey each year when he researches audiences across the globe to keep tabs on what bothers them most about PowerPoint. And in that number one spot every year, the biggest complaint is that the presenters read their slides. So how can that be?
teacher, I know that's rhetorical. You didn't mean me to answer. How can that be? This complaint comes back year after year after year is for the number two reason that Dave uncovered in his survey. And that's that PowerPoint users write full sentences on their slides. Each bullet point is a full sentence. And humans cannot listen to a presenter and read what's on the slide.
They can't do two things at once. They can't read.
Multitasking is not as efficient as everybody says.
Yeah. They can either read or they can listen.
Either one.
One or the other.
Either one.
Yeah. And I mean, to touch on the sentence thing, it's far, far easier for a speaker or anybody to expand upon a sentence fragment or a word or even a, you know, small bullet point as opposed to paraphrasing a longer sentence.
Exactly.
So I think that's the thing there.
Yeah, I've never been good at following the rules, and I started presentation design because the idea of textbook looking lists of bullets and boring text and that convey very little of a story was just appalling to me. So I'm always siding with the audience and assuring that the speaker support is that. It's just that it's support. It's not the full story on the slide. It's supporting the presenter. So the focus is on the presenter, not people reading the slides, or worse yet, the presenter reading the slides to the audience. It's just a bad paradigm.
But Troy, I'm going to ask you this. How many times have you heard this then? And you have a great clientele, so probably less than I have, but our audience is different.
Yeah. Everybody has a different audience. And I say, yes, but your audience wants to focus on you. So let's make it so they do that. And there's a battle, and more, you know, the financial industry, the pharma industry, it definitely gets more into that realm.
Yes.
But I get to, you know, play the card of, let's look at what we did with, you know, with this entertainment property. Let's look at what we did with this launch property, and let's look at how successful that was. Let's make your stuff that successful. And
exactly.
So there's a negotiation that goes on, and it definitely is not always won, but it's all about the audience, and the audience does not need full sentences that bore everybody, including the presenter, oftentimes.
Well, I guess I start with the audience perspective too, but I use it to leverage some scientific facts that help me design my slides. I'll ask them, okay, so how is your audience different? And they'll describe that they're scientists or that they're doctors or they're in the pharma business. And I'll say, but they're human beings and they learn the same way as I do, as anybody out there. We all have a physiological need to learn in a certain way. So I will start quoting Richard Mayer's Multimedia Learning, which was simplified by Cliff Atkinson in his Beyond Bullet Points book. I think that was groundbreaking. We all know that. He won great, helped win big court cases with that. But the stats in there are based on Myers principles. And I think it's important to understand that science because it helps your clients, people for whom you are creating the presentations, understand why you approach the design the way you do. It's not design for the sake of design. Rick Altman talks about decorating slides. I think the typical client gets confused between good design and decoration. So
I always say we're your communicators, not decorators.
Exactly.
When you're making a slide.
So the one stat I use over and over again is that bullet point slide that we've been slamming so far. The retention with the headline and bullet is around 20%. When you convert those bullet points to a graphic, his research, Mayer's research, says that it's closer to an 80% retention, if I'm interpreting his research correctly. Anyway, using that science, I would say convinces my clients most of the time to the less is more approach.
You have such a business scientific mind, Sandy. I just explain things as my reason for developing the presentation way that I did is this is set up for the audience view, which means I 100% agree with Sandy. There's my stat, but in just a much simpler, less businessy term, and just says this is what is best for who you're presenting to.
Well, my thinking, which I guess is maybe pseudoscientific, the way I explain it is that I think bullet points were created to separate items in a block of text, but we become so used to them that I think they've stopped working. So we kind of ignore the bullet points, and what we see is just a big block of text, which, quite frankly, people don't want to read words. So psychologically, it looks like dense content, even more content than it might actually be. I think every time somebody has to do that visual carriage return down to the next bullet point, down to the next, down to the next, down to the next, a little part of them dies, right? And so we want them to have to do that as little as possible.
You know, as a follow-up on that little, the big block of text, this is another area where the templates in PowerPoint, at least the default ones, don't really help out because they have uniform line spacing and paragraph breaks. So just adjusting the paragraph breaks so you get a bigger gap between major bullets can help chunk that information to the audience better, or at least it doesn't look like one giant block.
That's a great point.
That's not a good solution, but it does say that the template setup isn't really, it's perpetuating the problem is what it really is doing.
Yeah. And also most default text boxes are shrink to fit,
yes,
which I hate because it just allows people to keep writing and writing and writing.
Oh, it must be okay that my text is getting smaller.
Oh, it's part of PowerPoint's helping me out. Just making it 8 point now, 7 point, 6 point.
There are lots of problems, lots and lots of problems that need to be overcome.
All right. So how can we get beyond bullet points? So we all agree they're terrible. How do we get beyond them? What are the solutions?
Well, I always say, and this is groundbreaking, I'm sure, don't even open PowerPoint. Don't even open your presentation software. Start creating a presentation. Or if you start creating a presentation in software and you're limited to what your skill set is, you are going to limit your content. Your content to design what you think you're capable of doing. So I just say, get on a notepad, start sketching out a storyboard.
That's awesome. Hard to get people to do, but really, really smart.
It can save them time down the road, but it is so, it's just like nobody wanted to outline their term papers in high school, right?
They just want to dive in.
The problem. I only wanted to turn in the outline. Here, this has all the info.
In bullet points?
But what I think it helps them do, too, is to understand, okay, I've got my idea down, but I cannot create this slide. And then they can make that decision whether or not they need to turn their presentation over to a presentation professional.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you must use bullet points, you got to think like a newspaper headline. How few words can be used to convey the message? The traditional rule for slide design is 3 to 5 bullets per slide. And you know, lots of people follow that rule by making 3 to 5 really long sentences or paragraphs in bullet form. So they haven't really accomplished anything besides meeting a rule. The real essence is 3 to 5 words per statement, and make it easy for the audience to see, read, absorb, and then refocus on the presenter. That's the goal of the speaker support, and it's a hard one for a lot of presenters.
Well, I like that newspaper headline analogy. I think that's really helpful.
Well, I teach something that I learned from Rick Altman. That's the second time we've talked about Rick today. He's got something called the three-word challenge, mm-hmm. which is taking every bullet point, headline, any sentence, every item of text, and trying to get it down to three words. And it's shocking how easy that can be without losing your what you're trying to say. And the reward is in the trying. So if you have, like I would say, if you have a 10-word, you know, bullet and you try to get it down to three, but you, quote, fail and get it down to five words, that's still 50% better, if my math is right on that.
Exactly. I'd add the one concept per slide rule. So, So what happens is you'll get this bullet text heavy slide. That often in my world becomes a section of a presentation. And each of those bullets is a concept that we should be covering. The pushback I often get in that case, you know, one concept per slide, is that it'll take longer to present.
Oh, that's a myth.
Oh, it's a myth.
Right?
A myth.
So the question I ask back is, okay, so did you just put these bullets on the page as to not be covered? If they're going to be covered, then it's not going to take any more time to split them up per slide, and it's going to be so much easier for your audience to retain the information.
Yeah, and it's a 25-minute slide if you're going to cover everything.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you guys did, but I used to get pushback on that all the time about how much content can be put onto a slide and how many slides can I use. I think a lot of it was presentation classes in the past instilled the idea that your presentation should only be so many slides for so many minutes, one slide per minute, or there was a big trend for managers to say, you have a five slide, you can come in and present five slides on this. Mm. And, it wasn't really what they're saying, but dividing content across multiple slides does not change the talk time. It can often make it quicker because now there's just one thing to talk about and you click and you talk about the next one. I think what was really being said is you have 10 minutes to present. Don't go over. The number of slides is kind of irrelevant to the talk time. So six bullets on one slide is the same talk time as six slides with one key message per slide. And I personally believe that you go through those six slides faster if they're individuals, as opposed to just one very dense one, because it takes the audience longer. Yeah. They have to look at the slide, refocus to figure out where you're at. This was a good use of animation. Only bring up the point you're talking about, stay giving it all. But yeah, it's such a hard thing.
I completely agree. And that whole thing, like you can only use five slides, that's making a real, that's coming back big in the corporate world.
Oh, is it?
I'm hearing from a lot of people. Oh. Yeah. Like, oh, my boss is telling us that, for this presentation, we can only use five slides. And I have to explain to them that what the boss is really saying is, don't bore me with the details. Just give me the macro. Just give me the results. Don't bore me with all the history and the research and everything. I just want the top line results. But they don't know how to ask that. So they say, well, just five slides. The problem is they still take 30 minutes of material and shove them in five slides.
Oh, yeah. I've had them where one slide had really creative use of animation. The content was there and a click, it would disappear and the next content would come up. It was really five slides layered onto one slide. You could just see by this, right. But in the printout, it was five slides.
Yeah. So I'm slide number agnostic.
That's an awesome term.
As well. But my solution for avoiding bullet points is something I call chunking. And what it essentially is you start with your vertical list of bullet points. Let's say you have five bullet points. That's a vertical list. And as I said, that's very difficult to read. You have to keep going down. You take each bullet point and you simply lay it out horizontally. Each one gets a chunk. So imagine those five bullet points now in five horizontal text boxes. Maybe they're colored in and knocked out, or maybe they're not. But it's easier for the eye to read horizontally than it is vertically, in my opinion. So they can easily scan across and see those five bullet points in basically five columns than they can in five rows. And you can actually use SmartArt, believe it or not, in PowerPoint to achieve this easily. If you take a text box of bullet points, you can right-click Convert to SmartArt, and then choose something that sort of approximates columns, and then you can convert that smart art to shapes, and sometimes you delete arrows or whatever, but then that sort of automatically does this chunking for you.
As a tag on to that, first of all, we use the exact, instead of chunking, I use visual layouts. We take the content, we visual lay it out into buckets. So if there's three bullets, there's three vertical columns, same idea. But the SmartArt is actually, I think, one of the best researched and implemented tools in PowerPoint. I mean, there was a lot of design theory put into developing that. But the coolest thing about it is after you do what you just said, Nolan, is you can ungroup SmartArt and then just end up with everything editable, manageable, animatable, changeable. I mean, it's a great starting point.
And you can get rid of the bullet points. Did you know in SmartArt you cannot get rid of the bullet points unless you convert it to shapes?
Oh, there you go. Right. We're talking the literal dots, those little bullet points. Yeah, that whole conversion thing is cool, because even if you're doing a process graphic, even if you're not dealing with bullet points, SmartArt can be a place to start.
Yes.
So you start there, and then you convert it to shapes, and then you make it your own, so it doesn't look like everyone else's.
Okay, so a little aside, when I do training programs, we get to the SmartArt, and actually, I'm all about visual layouts. How do we take your bullet lists and we make them into something that's going to actually be working for your audience? I say, we're going to cover SmartArt, and we're going to rename this Smart Start, and that's how I introduce SmartArt.
Oh, you're so smart.
Wow. I think I just got something to steal. Thank you.
It's a great start. I mean, it really is good. I would love to see that. I mean, you can download additional SmartArt. If you go to the Microsoft online, there's tons of additional ones. And I've worked with there's lots of them online. You can actually build your own, but it's really, really, they're a extension file. They're really, really finicky to get implemented, but you can actually create your own. I've worked with a couple of corporations where we've done it, implement them corporate wide. It's more of an IT nightmare to get them in there, but the downloadable ones are really cool because they're already there and PowerPoint recognizes them.
Well, yeah, check that out.
Let me transition us. Do you feel Microsoft unintentionally created death by PowerPoint or endless bullet lists with the default presentation that virtually every template is being just an information structure of bullets? I'm kind of reiterating the same thing I pointed earlier, but I really want to call it out. Is it PowerPoint, or is it the way PowerPoint was set up and implemented?
I agree.
But I also would add that they're making great efforts to change that, even though they've got, how long has it been around? 25 years, right? 26 years now?
For PowerPoint itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been the same open default page that we saw on day one. But with the development of SmartArt, which, as we discussed, has its own pitfalls, but that, you know, that's really helped a lot. And most recently, the addition of Designer. I think they're making great strides in getting away from that perception.
Designer is really cool. I personally can't use it because it only works with their templates. But the concept of it is, how do we get away from bullet lists and more visual? It's right there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to blame Microsoft, but the concept of information being displayed in bullet hierarchy has become identified with PowerPoint. And it's really not a PowerPoint thing. When PowerPoint was created, which actually started as a Mac program that Microsoft acquired and this and that, it just really took what was a good idea at the time and made it the default. And now, as you said, 26 years later, it's still the default. But the world of communication, especially visual communication, has changed. So, you know, it's mainly because it's the only layout promoted by Microsoft. Keynote doesn't get that reputation because, in general, it shunned the idea of a bullet list in its basic templates and its overall use. The Keynote templates, you know, focus on visual imagery versus bullet lists. Other apps have completely played off of this, kind of like Tufte's played off of PowerPoint being the evil of all for most of his career building. Other apps have built off this by saying their default styling and templates completely avoid bullet lists. Prezi, Haiku, even Microsoft's new presentation app, Sway, are often describe themselves as not PowerPoint. What they're really saying is not bullet lists.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And look, to be fair, it's also the way people construct information today, which might be influenced by PowerPoint. In fact, I think it partly is. But it's too often just an unthought out list of things that people are writing. You know, there's so little processing and structuring in organization that goes into the vast majority of business presentations. It's just things. It's like, oh, this item, this item, this item. And, you know, audience, figure it out. There's no, you know, what's the story? What's the macro? What's the all that? So, you know, users are largely to blame here as well.
Well, how many times have you received a presentation? Well, maybe you haven't, but I receive presentations
lots.
From
I'll just
clients.
Answer right now. Lots.
Yeah, right now. Yes. That says, oh, it's just a brain dump. Literally using the tool to dump their thoughts.
And that's fine. I call it the content vomit. It's fine to start that place, but that's then you have to edit, which again, we're back to, you know, high school term paper. Nobody ever wanted to edit things. That's painful. That takes time. It's not fun.
Well, okay. So let's move on. Oh,
wait,
ahead,
hold on.
Troy.
Before we go there, I got the content vomiting. I'm making a note of that one. Yeah. But
okay. You take that. I'll take Smart Start.
You know, when somebody says, hey, can you work on a presentation? You got to somehow bucket it into what are we looking at so I can give you an estimate. You know, in addition to do you need a template? Is it taking your content, doing a makeover? One of the major topics for me are content. I identify the type of content we're going to work on, and that is there content messaging? Great. I will take your brain dump of information and we're going to craft that into a presentation that tells a story to the audience. Now, you've got to work with us to make sure we're telling the right story because we're not an expert in, you know, your field. So content messaging is actually a major factor when I start working with a new client and determining what type of work they have. So, you know, I don't mind getting that huge dump of information as long as they know there's a different set of work that has to be done with that content to make it into a presentation. So I line item it out as a separate thing.
It's kind of like getting a script in PowerPoint.
But a script is usually thought through. A lot of slides, as you're saying, they're not. They're like a lot of it's like, hey, I grabbed a slide from here and I typed in some stuff here and I grabbed a slide from there. And Bob had a great slide, so I threw it in here. And then about three phases in, you go, oh, Bob's slide really needs to go at the beginning because that doesn't make sense there.
I have one client, great client, but a lot of times I'll see a slide and it'll say, and here's where we'll talk about our strategy. And I have to say, I don't, what is your strategy? I don't know. They said, well, can you start designing it? We'll fill it in later. It's no.
That's a green box note that says strategy here.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, Sandy, sorry. What were you going to say before I totally went off?
No, I think it's great. But, you know, I was going to say that, okay, so you get bullets. We look at hundreds of slides a week and thousands of bullet points probably. What are some of the ways that you're seeing people try to format and emphasize within bullet lists? I know there's this need, I think. Okay, so now I have bullet lists. Now I need to emphasize stuff.
Right, because people instinctively know bullets are wrong, so they try to, okay, well, what can I do to make these readable, to make this
so
better?
So what's an example, Sandy?
Well, I see a lot of boldface and underlining, which I can't stand underlining. I really, really
underlining
can't.
Underlining is for hyperlinks.
Yes.
Yeah, I know, and it's just messy. Bold. I'll let you guys, yours?
Okay, I get it. Yeah, the one I cringe at, and this is all from a designer point of view, is using a different font in the middle of things to emphasize that information. It's kind of like the idea of bolding and underlining, but it just, all of a sudden you get this just wacky, huge font. I'm like, where did that come? Yeah, that's one.
I see a lot of highlighting with color, like trying to use different colors, which is fine. I mean, when people do that, their heart's in the right place, but generally when they're bolding or highlighting something in a bullet point, it's in the middle or so it's somewhere in the middle of the
exactly. Bullet. It needs to be,
and it is so hard to see it. What I tell people is, if you're going to highlight something in the middle, what you need to do is you need to we got to move those words around so that the highlight is at the start of the sentence.
Right.
And by doing that, now we're getting into newspaper layout, print layout. That allows people to scan things so they can read quickly just that first word or two in the bullet and understand what that whole bullet is probably talking about, as opposed to searching for it in the middle of it.
And when you say highlighting, you mean changing the text color, because PowerPoint doesn't have a true highlight text.
That's correct. Although we just learned how to do that, actually, if you really want to highlight. I learned last week or the week before. If you really want like a marker highlight, like yellow behind text, and I don't necessarily recommend it, but if you really wanted it, you can type the text and apply that highlight in Microsoft Word and then copy and paste that into PowerPoint and say, keep the format, and it will bring over the highlight. And then once it's in PowerPoint, you can use the format painter to apply that to other pieces of text.
What are some common bullet list formatting issues you have besides formatting business lists?
Bullets get colored with the color of the first word.
Oh, so yes.
If you're highlighting, like we just talked, you make your first word red, suddenly that bullet point is red and it just looks odd. So then you have to manually go in and change the bullet point color for that line.
Or worse, people put a space in front of it so that space is black because they know that it started, you know, saying
that's annoying.
Oh, I see that all the time. And yeah, that really annoys me. Then that's a huge formatting thing. Creating a new text box or copying a text box in from another presentation, it doesn't get the same bullet type. So if you're going to use bullets, all of a sudden now you got this mixture of bullet types, mixture of bullet spacing, you know, the space between the bullet and the text, mm-hmm. and you get a mixture of things like line spacing. You know, some are tight, some are taller, looser. So slides are just a jumble of formatting styles, which is equally as distracting of an item for an audience to focus on is why does that look different than that one over there? So I think that's a huge common formatting issue that people encounter because it takes a lot of manual work to get it aligned.
Okay, speaking of manual work then, copying and pasting a slide from an old presentation into the new presentation. A lot of people don't know that PowerPoint has a tendency to want to remember the formatting from the old presentation. And when you're pasting it into the new presentation, you'll get some of that old junk. And so you need to take a few more steps when pasting it to get rid of old bullet points, old line spacing, old colors to match your new template. And usually I just use paste special unformatted text.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's best friend right there.
It is.
Of course, that only works if you're using a text box that's set up for the template look so you get consistency.
Yes.
To keep that, when you do the paste special text only, it picks up the formatting of that text box and we're making an assumption that text box is formatted in line with everything else, and it often isn't.
So I think we also touched on this. Troy, you had mentioned, Nolan mentioned chunking. Troy, you call it visual layouts. I thought I'd add my two cents. I call the term for redesigning a bullet list into a slide that has the same text but not displayed as a bullet would be graphic text. That's all I
graphic
call it,
text. Graphic text. I like that. Okay, so let's just create an on-the-fly example. So client gives you a slide title, says this is the title of this topic, and five bullets, and each bullet is a full sentence or two. What are your steps, Sandy, to create a graphic text layout for that slide?
The one step is what I'll do is, depending on the amount of text that's in there, I will completely get rid of the bullet point. So let's say someone is adhering to the 3 to 5 rule. 3 to 5 bullet points, 3 to 5 words per bullet. It still looks like PowerPoint.
Yes.
So I just get rid of the bullets. Simple as that. That's one way to make it look better.
So what I would do is I would first look at the slide and I'd apply the three-word challenge. So I'd first try to get rid of as many words as I could. Then I'd probably use the smart art trick to turn those into five chunks. And then I would look to highlight, most likely, if I could. And maybe I have to reword each element a little bit. But I would try to highlight the first couple words or maybe just word. And so that will allow people to scan across horizontally very quickly and see, for example, I'm making stuff up like strategy, moving forward, challenges, blah, whatever. They can see those quickly. They know what each bullet point's topic is. And then, you know, maybe I'll take it further and add an image or add an icon for each above each one of those points to, again, help with the visual layout. That's usually what I'll do.
So I would, I got the slide with five bullet point sentences. I'll actually dupe the slide first and then hide the second one. So I can say, you know, when they look at mine, I'll say, go to that next slide. You can see exactly where you started. Did we keep the message the same? So I always give them the before and after. But I would, I think very similar to what Nolan was saying is I would create five boxes horizontally across. Mm-hmm. So there'd be five rectangles, maybe color coded, maybe not. And I would find the essence for each one of those bullets. So if it was strategy, future growth, you know, I just put some phrases up there. Again, it's easier for people to react to things that are wrong than it is to tell you what's right from nothing. So I'll put them in there and then I'll put a box below it that may or may not have bullets. Just like you were saying, Sandy, I like to get rid of the bullets and just use some paragraph spacing to separate them by distance. And I'll summarize those bullets down to hopefully 3 to 5 words in a little more descriptive area underneath it. So now I got this visual layout. It tells the same story. It's not put in that vertical list, but it's horizontal list with vertical data under it. And it's a visual layout. So now it's some color-coded boxes. If nothing else, people remember there was 5 points on it because there's 5 columns of information. That would be the quickest way of describing that approach. Obviously easier to see than do, but or describe.
So it's clear, none of us condones bullet points.
Don't condone it, but I do condone using them the way that people use them currently, I guess, or have forever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Historical use of bullets should be changed.
Yes.
So bullet points are huge, and it's a big topic. I think we tried to cover a lot of it. Let's do a little wrap up.
Okay, well, I think PowerPoint kills is a misnomer. Any presentation will hurt, thus kill hurt, get it? No matter what the software, if it's misused.
Okay, I'll bullet points main. How about that? Anytime I see a list of bullet points, 95% of the time I'm going to chunk them out. And with my designers, all I need to say is chunk that out, and they know instantly.
I think I've been fortunate to focus my presentation design career not on the business slides that are primarily where bullet lists come in, but on fun, highly visual stage shows where bullet lists are not even a consideration. As our client base has grown over the years, we now do a lot of presentation design for what I would call business level presentations. We're constantly providing alternatives to the traditional bullet list, pretty much everything we've just been talking about, and also developing a storyline for the visual content instead of just a brain dump of information. You know, let's put this into some sort of storyline, make it visual, integrating kind of that visual design concepts that are the big fun shows into business presentations, just to avoid bullet points that bore the audience to death. Okay, fun time, transition here. Get away from bullet points and discussion there. Talk about pro tips, things that we find exciting, unique, creative for All About Presentation Design. And I'm gonna start it off with one. I use the Tools 2 add-in. And I know next week we're talking all about add-ins. Not next week, next episode. We're talking all about add-ins as our topic. But this one has just been huge lately. And it's one particular tool in it. It's called the Rounded Corner Tool. And what it does is, you know, when you create a rounded corner rectangle, if you resize it, the rounded corner changes size as well, based on the size of that box. But when you have 3 boxes on a slide, and I'm thinking more about the visual layouts. So some visual layouts, we need the rectangles to be taller than others, and when you make them taller, the radius of that corner changes, and suddenly to me the slide design doesn't work anymore because now you have this visual disparity. You have 3 different looking rounded corners. Anyways, Tools 2 is an add-in that has a tool called the Rounded Corner Tool. Select the one you want to use as your master. Select the other 2, 3, 4 rounded boxes. Click the one little button, and it changes the radius to be identical on all of them. It's phenomenal from a design point of view.
Lifesaver, it sounds like. I mean, I didn't know about it. I'm downloading today.
It is so cool. I mean, there's a ton of tools on there, and I'll talk more about them on the next episode. But that one right there, I just got done using it.
It's not expensive.
We're talking about, but yeah, the rounded corner tool. It's just because you can't do it in PowerPoint. There's a couple other options out there that do it, but it's just brilliant.
My tip is a presenting tip. If you're in slideshow mode and you want to jump to another part of your presentation, instead of advancing past slide or advancing back or going into slide sorter, which is always clunky, all you need to do is type in the slide number on your keyboard. So if you're on slide 20 and you know that your budget is on slide 40, and you know your audience is like, all right, wrap it up, you know, jump to your budget, all you have to do is type 40 on your keyboard and hit enter, and you'll jump right to there. So it's really nice if you have like a little crib sheet written of like your important slides. If somebody says, hey, can we go back to the org chart? You know, well, I know it's somewhere. Oh, it's slide five. All you do is hit five, enter, and you jump
right
to it.
One of the coolest features that's been in PowerPoint forever is the ability to do that. I mean, I live by that. I'll have my show computer up and I'll have a secondary computer or a printout, because a lot of times presenters don't necessarily go in order. Either they're running out of time and they need to jump to it, or my biggest example of where that would be good is an award show. And for whatever reason, they announce an award winner out of order. Well, you can't reveal the next name because that would be revealing an award winner. So you get that seamless way of jumping to it if you have a reference point. So very, very cool feature to know about.
Well, my tip is bullet related. I know when you kicked off this segment, Troy, you mentioned we're going to get away from bullet points. But as a builder of templates, I'm sure you've run into problems when you don't want bullet points in your templates. It disables the tab function, and you're forced to use the increase or decrease list level if you don't have the bullet point on that first level. Echo Swinford and Julie Terberg have discovered an excellent technique, replacing that first bullet with a bullet, quote unquote, air quotes, that's called zero width space. And it allows you to appear to have no bullet point and use your tab key to get to the next level of bullet point formatting. Actually, it's not in their book. It's something they've uncovered, I would say, in the last couple of weeks. And they have to write a blog about it or something, because I think it's ingenious. Zero width space is what they replace the bullet point with, and it allows you to maintain that tab key functionality for the users.
I have to look at that. That might be different than the way I do it, which is adding a space but making it basically one point. So it's
right.
as minimal as can be.
Oh. Yeah, it is a little different.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I might be learning something right now, pro tips that are going to be used. Okay, and our second cool thing is tech tips, and that's pretty much anything tech. It could be a conference. It could be a cool app. It could be a cool piece of equipment. And for tech tips this week, I'm going to actually talk about a Microsoft thing that I actually started using that I didn't realize was a Microsoft thing. On the iPhone, I am loving a new keyboard called WordFlow Keyboard. It's free. It's for the iPhone. It's for Windows 10 phones. I'm not sure if there's an Android version out there, but it does a couple of things. You can replace your keyboard. So when you're typing a text message or an email, it has swipe. So in other words, you never pick up your finger. So if you say, hello, you just start at the H and slide your finger around, H-E-L-L-O, and it does some... analyzes what letters you hit, and it comes up with the word. It's really fast, works really great. But the really cool thing about it is they have a one-handed angle keyboard. So the keyboard, if you're going to type with your right hand, the whole keyboard angles off so that your right thumb can hit every key space on there. It's really, really cool. And what's really funny about it is I was using it based on somebody else had said you should try this. And, I had them search for it and, installed it off the App Store. It was like weeks later, I realized, I'm like, oh, Microsoft made or distributed this. It's really cool. WordFlow keyboard. I'll put a link to it. You have to look at it just to it's just crazy to explain how it works, but I think it's really, really cool. And just getting back from this really awesome escape with my wife to Paris and London, I'm going to say my tech tip number two is Sprint cell phone company, which is really funny, but I've been with Sprint forever and they've really gotten better. I really like them. I pay for everybody's phones on them, all of my family. But this past 2 weeks, my experience in Europe was completely different than any other time. And not just because it was my anniversary trip, but because Sprint has added free texting and internet access to international use all through Europe.
Can use unlimited internet?
Texting and internet at a slower speed, which is really funny because I didn't find it that much slower. Calls still cost, 20 cents a minute isn't as bad as it used to be, but it was, it's free. AT&T. I mean, I literally called them up, said, hey, can you explain this global one world calling plan? So for better or for worse, I was on my phone a lot. I was checking email. I was texting with my kids. We have, hopefully you can't hear it because I got people outside jackhammering at my home office. We're having our whole backyard. We're having a big landscaping remodel done, but it was really cool. So my mother would come over to the house every day and take photos of all the work that had been done and send them to me. So I would get them. But we were using Google Maps and Yelp and TripAdvisor, you know, to find where we were and, you know, just things I've never done while overseas. It was just a really cool thing.
My tip is the Pocket Projector by Brookstone. It sounds kind of dorky, but it's this little 200 lumens. I'm not kidding. It's really small, but it's a great little travel projector that I throw in my backpack. And I've already been able to use it on business trips. It's just amazing for brainstorming, that type of thing. Plugs into my... It is available on a wireless. I happen to get the...
Is it a VGA, a USB? What kind of connection is it?
It's HDMI. And it's just, it's really... Having started in the ad agency world, when we literally pulled these huge projectors behind us on airplanes that were bigger than Echo's suitcase...
Which is saying a lot.
Yes. It's freedom.
Sandy, do they have a package with the massage chair as well on it?
No, like how tiny is tiny? Pocket projector. Does it fit in your hand?
Okay. Yes, I can hold it in my hand.
Right? Is it battery or power plug-in? I'm just curious
power
now.
Power plug-in. It's power plug-in. It has 100 inch diagonal when projected. And like I said, only 200 lumens, but it's perfect. We did it in a lighted lobby area in San Jose. I would say it's 5 by 5 inches.
That's
by 5 inches.
That's pretty small.
Yep.
Of course, I don't really count a projector unless it has 10,000 lumens.
And I know, you're in a different world.
I'm looking at the...
And it's got motion.
No, 20,000 lumens and warp, so you can put it on a... Anyways, yeah, there's...
Yes. This was for business productivity. How's that?
Give me a link to that. We got to include that so people can go check it out because I want to go see it too.
Well, my tip is a podcast that Troy actually turned me on to called the Freelance Transformation Podcast. And I have to imagine many of our listeners are freelancers or own their own businesses. And this is just a great podcast. Once a week, the host, Matt, interviews a different freelancer or person that owns their own business or basically that sort of left the cubicle working for the man world and just talks about different different aspects and tips and solutions.
And weren't you recently featured on podcast?
Yeah, well, I was interviewed a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure when the episode's coming out. I'll let all you guys know, but it's great. And I picked up tips and tricks and software to use and productivity tips.
It's got a lot of great info. I've listened to it for a while. And yeah. So I'm sure Nolan got asked to be an interviewee because I referred the podcast to him.
Indeed.
Even though I've never talked to Matt. It's a good one. It's another good one out there. Thanks for joining us. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio focused on presentation design. See more about us online at www.tlccreative.com. That's two C's in a row, tlccreative.com, and www.thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data visualization training, drop me a line or go to nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz and my blog at pptwhizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.